tweet at TodaySOR.
Just over 30 years ago, at Christmas 1989, the Romanian people overthrew and executed their communist leader Nicolae Ceausescu, and indeed his wife, even as he was building a vast monument to his own greatness. And it's been 20 years since the launch of British Prime Minister Tony Blair's ill-fated Millennium Dome. So what makes a political vanity project, and why are leaders so drawn to them? Well, for more, I am joined by the host of RTE's Humans of Politics podcast, A.B. Philbin Bowman. A.B., it is quite the intriguing subject. Start with that Romanian palace, which I understand was the heaviest building on earth.
It still is, Sean. It still is the heaviest building. It's an amazing, it's incredible building. I won't bombard you with numbers and statistics, but basically if you got 28 and a half croque parks and put them side by side, that's how big it is. It's massive. It's actually very hard to photograph properly because you've got to stand so far back that to get it all in, it just kind of looks like a big building, but nearer. But I was there about 7 years ago, and you can do this 2.5 hour kind of guided tour or whatever tourist thing. And at the end of it, they say to you, you have now seen less than 2% of the entire palace. So it's just vast. And a couple of details I absolutely love. It was the brainchild of Nicolae Ceausescu, who was the communist leader of Romania. And he was kind of an interesting guy because when he first came to power, he was a bit independent-minded. He was very much Romania before other things. So, for example, he criticised Moscow for invading Czechoslovakia when they tried to have a bit more independence. So he had this kind of independent streak. But then he went to North Korea in the early 70s and he went, wow, these guys, this Kim Il-sung, the cult of personality, the architectural ambition, this is where it's at. And then in 77, there was an earthquake in Bucharest and a lot of the city was sort of damaged. And he thought, this is my opportunity. This is a chance to rebuild. So he basically bulldozed a fifth of the city to create this whole core, just this enormous palace. And basically what happens, they started in 1984, and like, just to give you the sense of this, like, my favourite detail is that the boulevard leading up to it, they model it on the Champs-Élysées, but just in case Paris got any notions, they decided to make it exactly 1 metre wider than Champs-Élysées, just to prove the point that we've got the better boulevard. And then the other thing they did, another detail I love, is he had this enormous room with a double imposing marble staircase, and the plan was to have a giant picture of portrait of Ceausescu on one wall and a giant portrait of his wife on the opposite wall as the two stairs came down. But then he was thinking, do you know, my wife's actually a lot prettier than I am, and people might spend more time looking at her than at me. So what I'm going to do, I'll redesign it. So instead it'll be a giant picture of me on one wall and then a giant mirror on the, like, that is the level of vanity we are talking about here. And the supreme irony, as you've kind of alluded to, is that sort of 5 years after commissioning this thing and getting all of Romania's state-run factories start churning out marble from all over the country for this, his mismanagement of the country was so terrible that the people overthrew him.
Yes, and but did the project ever get finished?
This is the thing. They at this point, they were 5 years in. Now, they didn't finish it till 1997, but they basically figured, we've gone this far, we might as well finish this thing. So they did. It is now the home of both houses of parliament and three museums and an international conference centre. It's huge. It's called the Palace of the Parliament now, and you can go and visit it, as I say. It's quite an attractive, quite
now,
interesting place.
Closer to home, our nearest neighbour, they had the Millennium Dome. What was the dream and where did it all go wrong?
Well, look, we've all just been through New Year's, right? And I don't know about you, Sean, but for me, 9 times out of 10, New Year's Eve is a massive anticlimax because the clock goes 12 and everyone goes, yay! And then, you know, we're still the same people. If you're happy with your life, you're still happy with your... If you're going through a messy divorce, you're still going through a messy divorce, as our nearest neighbours currently are. So the British government had this... If they thought about it, they might have thought, maybe the mother of all New Year's Eve, the 31st of December 1999, maybe that's just going to be a really big anticlimax. But they didn't think that through. And so instead, they had this idea for Millennium Dome. To be fair to Tony Blair, he kind of inherited a half-baked idea from the John Major government. But they went full steam ahead and they made this video, which I absolutely love to promote it.
In 1851, the Great Exhibition was opened in Hyde Park. 6 million people went to see it. 100 years later, in 1951, the Festival of Britain was a similar success, and over 8 million visitors braved the wettest summer in years to see the spectacle. Now, for the year 2000, it's time for the biggest experience of them all. It's the 21st century. The future is now. The Dome at Greenwich, the biggest dome in the world and the first wonder of the new millennium. It's on the Greenwich Peninsula, on the Meridian Line, where time literally begins.
Where better?
I just love the hubris of where time literally begins. Only the British, I think, could conflate the beginning of time and the dawn of everything with a place in Greenwich where in the 1670s some British guy found a new way to set his clock. You know, important. I mean, can you imagine the Swiss government insisting the time began in the little Swiss village where some bloke invented the cuckoo clock? I personally, maybe I'm being biased, but I can't. Anyway, it all sounded very impressive and very big. But until the night in question, and this is one of those deadlines you just can't delay, like the 31st of December 1999 was going to happen at a certain time. And basically they got the security wrong and all these great and good and rich and powerful people were left queuing for ages. And it was a total damn squib. The Queen was in this half-empty dome. They never quite knew what it was for or what the point was, because the millennium, what is that? It's just too big. And it just, on that night, it just became crystallised in the public mind as A, a fiasco, and B, kind of at a deeper level, a metaphor for the whole new Labour thing, that it was all very brash and full of promise and exciting and new, and actually it was kind of empty and a bit pointless and a bit meaningless. Now, we might swap it now for, you know, where we're at in the moment.
It's not as though it was a total waste of time and space and money. I mean, I think I was at a U2 concert there about 6 or 7 years ago.
It is now a private venue and it's a music venue and it's a very successful music venue. Some people would say all this public money was spent on it and then it was handed over to private people who made it a venue, and isn't that sort of new Labour all over, public-private partnership? So look, it wasn't a total disaster, but in the public mind it became this metaphor for the emptiness of, and the
right,
vanity of new Labour.
Now, from the UK, we move to the world's biggest statue. Where is it and who built it?
So it's called the Statue of Unity. It is 182 metres high, which is twice the size of the Statue of Liberty. And it's in Gujarat in India. It was unveiled just over a year ago. And it depicts a man called Sardar Patel, who was the first deputy prime minister of India. Yes, you heard that right. The first deputy prime minister. And look, if you know anything about Indian independence, if you ask a typical Radio 1 listener who delivered Indian independence, I'm guessing most people would say, well, Gandhi and Nehru, right? They're the kind of superstars. They're the Collins and Dev of the Indian independence movement. And so this guy, Sardar Patel, very interesting, very important, key lieutenant of Gandhi's, last guy to speak to Gandhi alive, as it happens. But like, just not a household name anywhere around the world in the same way that Gandhi and Nehru are. So if you were going to build this enormous statue as a giant tourist thing, you would expect that maybe Gandhi or Nehru would be the obvious choice. And the second thing that makes it really unusual is that it was built by the current government, who are the BJP. They're kind of Hindu nationalists. And Sardar Patel, because he was the first deputy prime minister, he was the sort of home affairs minister, he actually clamped down on Hindu nationalists after Gandhi was shot, because Hindu nationalists killed Gandhi. So it's kind of a mystery. It's almost, and this is a crude analogy, apologies to any historians listening, it's almost as if a Sinn Féin government here decided to build an enormous statue for independence to, you know, Kevin O'Higgins, the first Home Affairs Minister, who actually kind of clamped down on IRA people after the Civil War. It's just a very strange choice. So mm-hmm. I kind of dug into what's going on here. And basically what it comes down to is, at the time, the Congress had all the sort of stars of Indian independence. And bear in mind, the Congress are still the rivals of the BJP. But the BJP are trying to reclaim certain figures. And they stuck on this guy Patel, partly because his name is Patel and it's an incredibly common name. And they realised there's votes in this. And if we can elevate the most famous Patel and make a huge statue of him and claim him as one of ours and have a national holiday in his name, we can kind of claim his mantle.
And is it up there yet?
It is up. Oh, it's been up for a year. Yeah, it's this enormous thing. You can go up the middle of it and see it. And
you've also identified a few other vanity projects, and perhaps some of them not quite on the same scale, which didn't make it off the ground.
Things that didn't happen. So yeah, the Bertie Bowl is the famous example from here, early 2000s. It was like going to be a national stadium in Abbottstown. It was going to be the new home of soccer and rugby in Ireland. This is before Lansdowne Road was redeveloped, and it just, people kind of, it just cost us to spiral. It started becoming an embarrassment and the whole thing was just scrapped. Perhaps more relevantly for what we're going through now, when he was Mayor of London, Boris Johnson had a lot of what were called vanity projects that didn't get off the ground. There was going to be this enormous bridge over the Thames. There was going to be a garden bridge, and it was, huge money was spent on the idea and the concept, never happened. He was apparently going to build an airport in the Thames estuary, which in a world of rising sea levels doesn't sound like a great idea to me, but there you go. He spent $5 million exploring the possibility of that. There's a giant Olympic slide that's gone way over budget and various other schemes. And now that he's Prime Minister, there's been talk, for instance, of an enormous bridge linking Northern Ireland and Scotland. Now, that may never happen. And you'd have to worry that by the time it was built, one or both of them may no longer be in the United Kingdom, which is a very real political possibility. So I'm not sure that'll ever happen, but he seems to like his vanity projects.
Now, back to somewhere you mentioned earlier as the inspiration for some of the these projects. North Korea.
Yes, this really is the home of some of the biggest and maddest vanity projects of all time. The tallest unoccupied building in the world is in North Korea. It was supposed to be a hotel. It was started in 1987 to rival a South Korean hotel that was then very, very tall. And we're going to do one better. But then in 1989, the money, when it was meant to open in 89, but the money from the Soviet Union dried up because the Soviet Union dissolved. And so it's still unfinished 30 years later. It's there. It's the biggest unoccupied building. It's been called the Hotel of Doom. But North Korea is currently undergoing a resurgence of vanity projects. So there's talk that it may get relooked at. They're currently trying to build a Winter Olympic stadium, even though they're not holding the Winter Olympics. Just because South Korea has one, they want to do a better one. They've talked about redeveloping an industrial port into a, you know, amazing beach resort. I'll believe it when I see it, based on the timeline of the tallest building in the world. But yes, apparently it's a great country to live. It's a horrible country to live in unless you're a choreographer or an architect or indeed the dear leader.
A.B. Philbin Bowman, dear colleague, host of the RTE podcast, Humans of Politics. Thank you so much indeed.